to tell you about the time I got into a discussion with the judge about that.
At least we're not doing waterboarding.
By the end of the presentation, that might
change. That might be an option.
Yes, you do not know everybody's going to line the aisle, so.
That's right.
We're not going to get out easily. We need to make a quick escape.
But they can.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, everybody. Congratulations, surviving to this point of the day. This is a session entitled Mobile Initiatives at Maryland and Florida, Addressing the Spectrum of Mobile Planning. I have two charges here. The first is to go and encourage you all to please do evaluations, not only for this session, but for any other session that you might have attended at EDUCAUSE. The only way that we improve this experience from year to year is through your input. And then of greater honor to me is to go and introduce our two speakers this afternoon. The first is Christopher Higgins. He's the Interim Director of Learning Technologies and Environments at the University of Maryland. And he has been at the University of Maryland for over 10 years. He has been working in the field of teaching and learning technologies for more than 15 years. He does research and workshops in computer-assisted language learning to a more generalized support of technology and teaching and learning. He has enjoyed a broad experience from supporting and designing language labs to developing materials for online courses. Douglas Johnson is the Assistant Director for Learning Services at the University of Florida. He has 10 years of IT experience and successful management of personnel and project management, including strategic planning, evaluation, budgeting, implementation, operation, maintenance, this goes on for quite a while, upgrades, training, support, and continuous improvement of heavily used mission-critical enterprise IT systems. He is an experienced project manager specializing in multi-unit collaboration to bring enterprise-level systems successfully into production. And at this particular point, I will turn the kiosk over to these gentlemen.
Good afternoon, everybody, or good evening, whichever you prefer, depending upon where you're from. As we get started, we realize that, you know, it's kind of late in the day, so we really do encourage you to participate and engage. And as we get started, we just want to first talk a little bit about our path for the presentation. First I'm going to talk a little bit about the story of Maryland and its mobile initiative, and then Doug's going to do a little bit about University of Florida. Then we're all going to kind of meet in the center and talk about some of the common issues and hopefully have some good discussion about mobility and where things are going. And I hope you don't mind me remaining seated. I'm short and I don't want to stand behind a podium. So Maryland started its mobility initiative shortly after the iPhone came out. And so that was when the first brainchild kind of came up, you know, a month or two later. And when they were actually looking at, you know, what was going to be involved in this and what it meant to have a mobility initiative, they really tried to figure out what were motivators for this. And there were a few things that were in there. One was student recruitment and a way to, how could we attract the best and the brightest students to come to Maryland? And so that was part of it. We also looked at faculty innovation. We had a number of faculty doing some interesting things in creating applications and different things for not for iOS devices because they were barely out there, but for a variety of different devices. And then others were doing some research into activities for students that could be enhanced by using mobile devices. So it was really about faculty innovation. But it was also to look at how do we improve the interaction among students and faculty using these devices. So that to try to get that interaction and that engagement among those two parties together, mediated by mobile devices. As we evolved through the process, you know, really it was looking at, even after the first year, it was realizing that this is going to go. This is not going to be something that's going to pitter away. And so we really had to look at what was it for the mobile enterprise and how does that affect us. So just to kind of give you a context for how I'm going to talk about things, as I was making my presentation, I kept talking about the year of. And so I'm really considering this the mobile zodiac. I'm not going to talk about this in a linear fashion necessarily, but really kind of in a topical fashion about this. And so looking at, you know, devices, engagement, applications, content, and the enterprise. So as I mentioned, we started, you know, 4 years ago with this. And when we're looking at, you know, that first initial motivation for, to get going, it really was, you know, this new device, this new innovation that, what can we do with this? You know, PDAs had been around for a while. Many schools had done projects with PDAs. But what do we actually look at and make sure that we can actually move forward with on the idea of, you know, these new devices that are touchscreen, they have some really strong possibilities. And so, like I mentioned, we looked at recruitment, and it was bringing those students into this. So when we're looking at how we ended up trying to do this throughout the years, we're in our fourth year of our initiative. The first year really focused on individual student use. We gave devices to about 175 students as part of our honors program. They were in a Banneker Key program and our Maryland incentive program. So the best and the brightest of Maryland received these devices. What we realized in that process was the fact that they weren't all in the same class. So it was hard to really understand how they were using them academically, aside from their individual use for study and for personal things. Year two, we really wanted to focus on how we can actually engage our faculty, get them to learn how to use these devices or engage students using these devices. And so we actually looked at how bringing those faculty into this and getting the devices into their hands in different ways. And one way was actually a loaner pool of devices that they could use for their classes. This past year, in the third year of our initiative, really kind of looked at moving beyond the iOS devices and into the mobile web and into other applications, Android, you know, mobile app development. But we also continued a strong emphasis on faculty engagement. We needed to really gather those faculty and get them engaged in the process to look at this. And right now, in this third year, or this fourth year, we're actually looking at how we can actually engage faculty with content. And the tablet devices that have come out have really changed the way we can think about things. You know, we had laptops before where we could actually look at, you know, and read content, but the simplicity of having an iPad in your lap, reading some content, has changed everything in many ways. It provides a flexibility. Instant access to the web, instant access to media is a strong piece of this. And so when we're looking at those devices, these are helping us change the mode in which we think of how they can be engaged in teaching and learning. So, the year of engagement really was, if we think about this, it's really how do we engage. For our perspective at Maryland, we focused a lot on teaching and learning. And so we focused on how do we engage our faculty to engage our students. And it may be, you know, a bypass through the normal, you know, okay, let's engage our students, but we wanted to make sure our faculty were prepared to do this. And in doing this, we actually created a program called our Faculty Fellows. The faculty fellows were actually part of a Summer Technology Institute sponsored by our Center for Teaching Excellence. And these faculty fellows actually came up with projects that they wanted to do. And they went through the Summer Technology Institute developing and working on those projects that they would then use in the fall. We created this loaner pool of devices so they could actually borrow these devices to work with their students. We had about 70 iPod Touches. This is year two, so they were second generation iPod Touches, so there was no camera, no easy voice recording. But we were able to actually get the faculty to do this. And I think, you know, as we look at this, we've actually been able to expand beyond kind of the minimal piece that the device was. Now, we've had a variety of classes participate in this. And part of that was, we've had a lot of it was focused on data collection. And so we had a kinesiology class that actually set up to do teacher observations. And so they actually went through and had their students go and observe master teachers, collect data, and bring that to then connect wirelessly, and that data was sent to the faculty member. In a communication class, they actually did a media journal, where students over a two-week period at Maryland and at a few other universities around the world collected data about their media usage on the device. And so they were able to collect that data, again, send it to the faculty member. One of the things that we realized is that, you know, a lot of these were individual pieces of information that faculty were collecting. We also had, what we did was we wanted something that was going to be more permanent, and we didn't have to create an app every time somebody needed that. So we had a faculty member in architecture, wanting urban planning really, doing a walking tour of College Park. And what they did is actually walked around neighborhoods of College Park and note where there are cracks in the ground, it's lots of litter, that kind of a thing, and they did an assessment of that. Then that went up into a database coupled with GPS data and exported into KML to be able to put into Google Maps. So they were able to do that, so you can actually go into a map of College Park and be able to find the data that they had there. Another class was a mobile journalism class, which was pretty extensive in the way it actually worked. And mobile journalism, information 3.0, talk about ubiquitous technology. They used every type of technology that you could possibly think of. One of the culminating experiences for the students was actually to gather data and interviews with our faculty and our visitors on Maryland Day. Maryland Day is an open house, getting 70 to 80,000 people coming to campus. And what they did is they went around the campus during Maryland Day, gathered video interviews, audio interviews, tweeted, and blog entries throughout the day, and probably about 1,000 of those entries for the 30 students that are in the class. And it was a way for them to experience what it is to be a mobile journalist. So apps. Everybody knows apps. You know, how many campuses have created an app? Most campuses. So when you're looking at app development, for us it was a motivation initially that when we started for the initiative, we needed to have something ready for our students. So there were a few things that we worked on. One, we created a mobile portal. We have a portal for our students, and we created a mobile version of that, which actually had access to certain information, including a few aspects into our LMS. As we moved on, we actually, in the second year, we wanted to support the faculty as much as we can. So we created a number of one-off apps, like I mentioned, the data collection apps for those courses. We also had a new app created called UM Info, which is you know, the standard kind of content about campus, campus maps, scheduling, things like that. And so we did create a variety of those. Now, we also had a programming course going on. And I have to say, I think some of the most innovative apps come out of the programming courses, because the students don't have the restrictions, or they think broadly in how they're doing this. So a lot of those apps, while may not be public at the moment, they did a tour of the campus. They did a beat maker, so you could actually take and synthesize different music and actually create your own beats and your own music. And they just did a variety of things that were very creative, and that was 20 students, 10 projects in this iPhone programming course. Last year, we expanded the concept of our own mobile presence, which was really UMD Mobile. We worked with a company to actually pilot their version of a mobile app, but it also had an Android version as well as a mobile web version, so you could get it to it on any device. It didn't matter. The biggest innovation last year, however, was really our programming contest. The programming contest basically focused on getting the students to create apps about Maryland. And there was a huge variety of activity. We had about 100 students involved in the program. I have to say, you know, attrition, it was a long project, and attrition happened, and so at the end there were probably 30 that stayed involved. But we had some really interesting apps come out of that. The winner was an app called Jam My Jam, which allows you to, it's a social music app. So you're walking by and you can see, oh, somebody's playing this song, and listen in on what they're listening to. And so you can actually share their music. Another one, which was the second place winner, was actually a thing called Atmo, which is a way for individuals to vote on music. So there are a variety of things, and that is actually used in DC clubs. So DJs use that to actually find out from the dancers and everything what music they want to listen to. So, content. This is one that I think, you know, is really kind of a new area for us. I think you probably saw that a couple weeks ago, Indiana University announced their partnership with their bookstore and a variety of e-textbook companies to connect, you know, and use and promote the use of e-textbooks and e-content with their classes. So that's one of the emphases we have for this year, is really figuring out how can we help our faculty use e-textbooks and open content to deliver and develop their own ways of communicating and engaging their students with that in their areas. So really at this point, the question is, where do we go from here? So we've been doing this for 4 years, and as you probably saw, a study came out that pretty much most students have some sort of cell phone, but most students, actually, I think the study that was launched this morning said about 75% of students have a smart device. So it has web access, has data access. So we're beyond the concept of initiative. We're into the concept of mobile ubiquity, where everybody has this. So we have to look, as we're moving forward, beyond the idea of an application or beyond an idea of a device, but how do we use what the students have in their hands to actually engage them and move forward in a teaching and learning format and in that academic environment? And how do we help our faculty understand how they can do that? And I think it's really working with our faculty who we're actually going to be able to make the biggest strides. So I think, you know, for us, that's our challenge. You know, I've said this before, but you know, I've been talking about the mobility initiative for a couple of years now, and I can't see myself talking about it in another year, because if I am, you know, that mobile ubiquity is either didn't happen or didn't materialize, or we're behind the times. And I truly believe that as we move forward, everybody having the device, it's going to change not just our academic environment, but even here in how we actually deliver content to you in our presentations.
Why didn't it do that while you were talking?
It liked you. Here, it's the audio cable.
Oh, okay.
It was touching.
Hi, I'm Doug Johnson from the University of Florida, and thank you all for coming this afternoon. I think it's become pretty much obvious to everybody that the proliferation of mobile devices has kind of reached a point where it's defining the future that we face. It's defining the future of computing. There will be continuing roles for desktop computers, for high-performance computing, but the reality is that the world is becoming increasingly mobile, and mobile demand is only going to increase, and it will increasingly dominate what it is that we do. Hence the importance of this conversation that we're trying to start this evening. Can you see the mouse on there? That'll work. So at the University of Florida, the initiation of mobile activity, entering into the mobile world, was very different from what was experienced at Maryland. In our case, it was a student who was an iPhone user and was really interested in iPhone app development. And the student realized that the University of Florida had not done anything in the way of app development, so he built a UF mobile application and started developing some advanced features. He really did a nice job. And in an entirely accidental way, one of the members of my staff at the university stumbled on this student And so we began to work to try and bring this guy, Brian Dubnow is his name, into the fold of institutional development and institutional priorities. So as we dealt with Brian, one of the things that we had to deal with were what were Brian's motivations and what were Brian's motivators. And chief among these was that he was not at all interested in making money off of this app that he was developing. This was a student with revoltingly good priorities. I tried to buy his app from him. He wouldn't sell because he wanted to control development. I tried to hire him. He didn't want to take a job because he was afraid that it might potentially interfere with his role as a student, and he didn't want to compromise his academics. I tried everything I could think of to manipulate, get this kid, enslave him somehow, and failed in every single possible way. So that kind of put me in a mode where I had to collaborate with him. And there are some real intriguing aspects of this that we'll talk about, that I'll talk about in just a minute. But one of the biggest things that Brian needed that I had was access to information sources at the University of Florida. And so our role became one of myself and this member of my staff, whose name was David Kay. He's now moved on to bigger and better things. Would meet with various information providers around campus and broker introductions and enable Brian to continue to work on this iPhone app that he was working on. Now, this generated, the fact that we were working with this kid that was building this iPhone app, generated all kinds of anxiety around the campus at various different levels. For example, within the Office of Information Technology, and I'm part of that office, there was a great concern for issues like how do we maintain this thing? What if this kid works on this and suddenly gets bored with it, decides to quit? How do we sustain this thing over time? How do we bring institutional initiatives into this app development? This was a student who was developing this app from the perspective and the framework of student interest. And that is not a mode of thinking that the University of Florida is necessarily familiar with. Did I say that diplomatically enough? Anyway. So there were some real concerns, and there were legitimate concerns within the context of IT about the development of this app by this student. Then there was the purchasing department. Dealing with the purchasing department was really fascinating because this student was offering to give this app that he had developed to the University of Florida. All he really wanted out of this was official recognition. He wanted to be able to say that this was the official iPhone app of the University of Florida, which, you know, and the kid's a freshman, he was, when he started this, he was a freshman. I thought that would be really cool, and I understand that. But our purchasing department was really hung up on what does free mean, and what are the implications of free for our jobs? If we start doing more free stuff, will we continue to have, I mean, honest to God, I ended up on the phone for about 2.5 hours in various conversations with the purchasing department about the fact that, yes, we were trying to move this app forward as an official thing, and it wasn't costing us anything. Along the way. Then there was the general counsel's office. The general counsel's office was particularly intrigued, horrified is more the word, because, I mean, the first question out of our mouth was out of the general counsel's mouth was, this is going to be an enterprise service representing the University of Florida, but we have to send it out for a bid. But how do you send something out for a bid that's already being provided free? They really grappled with that for quite some time. It was kind of funny, as a person that does like to stir things up every now and then. It was really quite amusing watching these different groups. And then marketing and institutional relations was particularly fun because they're in charge of protecting the institutional brand. So it was, this kid's calling this UF Mobile. He can't call this UF Mobile. We own UF. We own University of Florida. He can't use that. You know, he's using our colors. We own orange and blue. He can't use orange and blue. Of course, there are many other institutions that would question that, but I mean, there were all of these concerns that marketing was raising, and then it was, oh my God, they went to the iTunes store and realized, you know, the App Store, and realized that 16,000 people had already downloaded this iPhone app. And if we jerk the rug out from under these 16,000 people, what a public relations nightmare this is going to be. So there were all these existential crises ripping across campus and me sitting in my office generally giggling hysterically. Everyone else positive feedback. This is really cool. This is really neat. I wish this had existed when I was a freshman because I got lost going to classes so many times. The public feedback on this particular app was just outstanding, and that, of course, only exacerbated the crisis for the institution. So the institution responds in the way the University of Florida does. It starts in analysis first and foremost. What's this whole mobile thing to begin with? Because the reality was, for the University of Florida, mobile was not really on the institutional radar. There were lots of pockets within the campus that were paying attention to mobile, but the institution was not. And ultimately, one of the convincing things that got the university in gear was, of course, going to the Gartner research. And I want to read a very brief quote that I think has really important implications. It affected what we were doing at the University of Florida, and it may have implications for your schools as well. You know, one of the interesting things about having these lights shining right at you is I suddenly realized just how phenomenally dirty my glasses are. By the end of 2010, 1.2 billion people will carry handsets capable of rich mobile commerce, providing an ideal environment for the convergence of mobility and the web. Mobile devices are becoming computers in their own right with an astounding amount of processing ability and bandwidth. The quality of the experience of applications on these devices, which can apply location, motion, and other context in behavior, is leading customers to interact with companies preferentially through mobile devices. This has led to a race to push out applications as a competitive tool to improve relationships and gain advantage over competitors whose interfaces are purely desktop browser-based. This is from a Gartner report. I have the citation here, so if you go look at the slides, download the slides, you can get that citation. But this idea of competition and moving into the mobile realm in an effective way, being a key component of competition, this began to get some attention at the University of Florida. We do football, we do basketball, we do baseball, we compete. We academics, we do that fairly well, but we compete on the field. So ultimately, the University of Florida was faced with the recognition that we needed to start moving quickly to catch up. We were behind. And so we launched a mobile project. Now, one of the interesting things here, when you think about what Chris was talking about with the initiative at Maryland, is that suddenly we see a different set of drivers at the University of Florida. Here's Maryland. They encountered this mobile thing, and they immediately start thinking in terms of how can we engage faculty, how can we engage students, how can we engage content and learning and teaching. At the University of Florida, we have a student who's saying, what can I build to make my life more convenient as a student? And then we have administration saying, oh my God, all of our peers are doing this. We need to do this too. So we have administrative drivers, we have student drivers, none of which I think are ultimately engaging what are the real possibilities of mobile devices. And so we'll talk more about that as we move on. But I just have to say, in this particular context, I've learned a lot from Brian, or excuse me, from Chris. I'm switching slides, and that kind of threw me off, because one of the other things, kind of fortunately not a tragic thing, but a somewhat problematic thing, is that Brian was left high and dry in this process. Once the university began to engage this process of we need to do mobile, the work and the effort that Brian had put forth just kind of was shoved over to the side. But don't worry about Brian. He's going to be back. So how do we function as an institution? Well, the first thing to do, of course, is we create a committee. This is July 2010. The University of Florida creates the UF Mobile Task Force. The University of Florida makes no decisions without involving a committee. In fact, I think there's probably a policy somewhere to that effect. December 2010, the Mobile Committee presents its recommendation, which basically boiled down to, you know, this mobile thing is important and we probably should do it. So there are a number of other components to the recommendation from this committee. One of them is simply to build locally. That we did talk to a number of vendors that did mobile app development for higher education institution. We talked to a couple of vendors that did application development for commercial entities that were interested in breaking into the higher education market. But ultimately, we decided that we wanted to build local. And that, again, the key driver here was that we wanted a mobile presence. The University of Florida needed to be found on the web as a developer of mobile devices and mobile presence. And generally, as a rule, the committee overlooked, because of its mandate, the committee overlooked the real implications of mobile development for the future. Another thing that in making the decision that we were going to develop locally was the recognition that the University of Florida has some unusual statistics when it comes to mobile devices. We've seen all of these reports, the stats that come out of other universities. At the University of Florida, for example, Apple devices are most common, but they are far from a majority. iOS platforms are about 34% of the university student body. Android devices about 16%, BlackBerry about 14%, which is amazingly high at the University of Florida. Palm OS devices still have a small presence at about 3%, and other devices at about 17% of the campus. But the implications of this, of course, are quite simple, that we have too many different device profiles that have a significant presence on the University of Florida campus. And that means that what we needed to look at primarily was web apps. Build once, push out to a variety of devices rather than concentrating on device-specific app development. And if you want to talk about the technicalities of our mobile app development or mobile device development, I can give you some details about that. So here's then another decision point faced by the University of Florida in our mobile project. Do we go with web app? Do we go with device apps? Do we go with web apps with web with device wrappers? Do we do both of these? Do we do all of the above? And of course, the circumstances and needs of your particular institutions are going to drive those decisions. This is not a one-size decision fits all. And so, again, you need to think about, as you think about your own local mobile initiative, you need to think about these types of questions and how they best fit your institution. Another decision point is to run your mobile development project, your institutional mobile project, as a centralized or a decentralized project. At the University of Florida, of course, the decision was centralized. And you know, when it comes to something as easy as web app development, a centralized process, you know, obviously brings to mind the usual metaphor about herding chickens. How do you bring disparate elements and disparate needs of a variety of units and a variety of constituencies and stakeholders from around campus into a single development focus? There have been some real challenges along those lines. But at the same time, it's also important to recognize that there are institutional issues, there are institutional concerns that need to be recognized in the context of app development. You get into issues of the institutional recognition, reputation. You do get into issues if you start engaging with services that provide access to critical data, registration processes, admissions processes, payment of fees, access to online courses. All of these have institutional implications that need to be considered at a higher level than simply, gee, this is kind of cool. If I write the code, I can do this. And then, of course, you also have serious needs for central administration to be informed about decision-making within the context of mobile development. And so at the University of Florida, we've gone, at this point in time, fairly strongly with a centralized development route. But interestingly enough, we're starting to run into problems with that. We're starting to run into the limitations of a purely centralized development process. And I'll say more about that in a few minutes. So August 2011, we launched the UF Mobile project. m.ufl.edu becomes the key starting point. It has the appropriate JavaScript enablers so that it recognizes a device when it hits the University of Florida web page and is then automatically directed to mobile-enabled web pages so that students, faculty, staff, alumni, anybody hitting these pages can access them and work with various features on a mobile device. So that brings us up to the present, more or less. September 2011, I'm now back to engaging Brian. Because what we've become to realize as the Central Development Group, that there are these limitations to meeting all of the needs of the constituencies. And we've started engaging colleges, we've started engaging faculty, we've started engaging students in the context of this mobile project, saying, what is it that you need? What is it that we should do next with our centralized mobile development process? And the result has been feedback from all of these different constituencies that have given us more functionality than we can possibly develop in our existing lifetimes. There are so many capabilities of these mobile devices, and people are recognizing those capabilities. They're demanding these capabilities. They're champing at the bit to begin making use of these capabilities, and we've become to realize as central IT at the university that we're not going to be able to meet that level of demand and that level of need with a purely centralized process. So we're starting to think then, how do we move to a more centralized and decentralized framework at the University of Florida? And I have to say that in conversations with Chris as we were preparing this presentation, I've gotten a huge realm of ideas from this school that has approached mobile app development in a very different way than we did at the University of Florida. So for me, this has been an immensely valuable collaboration, just putting this presentation together. So again, if you want to see the mobile process at the University of Florida, m.ufl.edu, please feel free to take a look and poke around. And I'm going to shut up for a couple of minutes and let Chris take the next stage. Actually, no, I'm not going to shut up. I lied. I want to take full advantage to say more. What I want to talk about is actually one of Chris's concepts that he's already used, the idea of mobile ubiquity. Predicting the future of mobile. Where are we headed? I think Chris hits the nail right on the head when he uses the term mobile ubiquity. More and more of these mobile devices are being developed. We've got a variety of phones coming out. We've got a variety of capabilities that are being built into these phones. We've got laptops. We've got tablets. We've got tablets spanning, you know, devices that are not much bigger than a cell phone up to devices that are not much smaller than a laptop. So there's a huge diversity in range and size and weight and functionality and capability in these mobile devices. And I think that it's fairly clear that mobile devices are and will continue to be increasingly pervasive in our institutions. Here's an interesting chunk of data that came from a recent survey of our most recent incoming class of freshman students. 92% of our freshman class came to the University of Florida with a computer of some kind. They already had something. 75% of those students identified the devices that they were bringing as including mobile devices, cell phones, smartphones, and so on and so forth. Of the 25% of students that were left, they indicated that they were bringing desktop computers. But the average age of their desktop computer is 4 years old. Those are old computers. And that leads to a fairly comfortable hypothesis that much of that 25% that's bringing a desktop computer with them are bringing a computer long enough to find out what their needs are going to be at the University of Florida, and then they're going to buy new devices. And it's highly likely in the current market, in the current computing environment, that most of those devices are going to be mobile in one form or another. So we've got a lot of mobile happening at the University of Florida, and we've got to respond to that. So I want to ask you at this point in time, take a moment, get your phone out, turn to your neighbor, and get their phone number, and then text them a message raising one of these, what we want to do is kind of raise these, I've been describing it as I've been going around and people see the little speaker thing on my name badge they've been asking. So what are you presenting on? And what I've been telling people is that what Chris and I wanted to talk about was kind of the meta issues, the issues that lie behind and above the question of should we or should we not develop a mobile initiative or start a mobile initiative at our own campus. And so I want to take them, and I'm going to hand things back to Chris now, honestly, I promise, so that he can very quickly review these issues for you.
So for us, when we were actually going through this idea of this presentation, you know, like I said, I've been giving presentations on this for over a year and have some common slides that I normally use, and Doug challenged me to think of this in a different way and put pictures instead of words on slides. But as we did this, we came up with some common ideas in this, in the sense that, you know, what are the drivers? How many of you have mobile initiatives on your campus or some sort of mobile effort? You know, what really was the driver? What motivated your campus to go in this direction? And so for us, it was, you know, clearly there were different motivators starting that process. And then, you know, when we look at those, you know, we focused at Maryland a lot on what I call mobile activity, that engagement. How do you use the devices for teaching and learning? How do you use the devices? Right now, I've actually purchased an iPad for all of my staff so they can actually see how it can be used in administrative and, you know, not just academic purposes, but, you know, for general purposes, and how can that improve our own work and that kind of thing. So that activity piece, as opposed to the concept of creating a mobile presence, having the mobile app, the various mobile apps. One school we worked with recently had their athletic app, their campus app, their app, but it was getting there. So if you look them up, they had like 10 apps that were specifically for that university, and which is all about that mobile presence, making themselves available there. So I think when we're also looking at this, it's the concept of, you know, what process are you going through in development? I mean, we've gone through kind of the whole spectrum, and we continue to do that. We don't have a true centralized model in any manner. I think we have a very much a decentralized model, which has its own caveats. And in some ways, it would be good to have some good centralized motivation to build certain things. And so I think, you know, learning from Doug, basically coming to that that kind of middle point of being able to do both, and then also looking at, you know, the concept of the mobile ubiquity. I can't see it here. The screen's a little small. This concept of where do we go from here? What is the future for this on campus? It's another tool. So how do we actually do that? And I think what we want to do is see where you guys are. You know, what are you thinking about? What are the drivers on your campus? Are you focused on the activity on your campus? Are you focused on mobile presence? Is there a mixer? Is something that we missed? So what do you guys think? I want to see a hand. Or somebody stand up because it's really bright in here. And I think that's one thing we really didn't touch on is, in a sense, the apps that are beyond our own capacity, beyond our own development. So the purchased apps, the free apps, the apps that are integrated with our texts or our, you know, programs, you know, like Tegrity, things like that. And a lot more of that is actually happening. And so I agree. I think that's really kind of a cool concept. I really do want my own true little to-do list that would actually just extract from my brain the things that I'm thinking that says, okay, I have to do this next. And I think our students would love it, but that's a really good
one. I do not want a device that extracts from my brain the things I'm thinking.
So any other thoughts on your projects? I mean, I know for us, when we look at the concept of, you know, activity versus presence, we have focused a lot on how we actually engage our students and engage our faculty. And, you know, initially in our first year, what was interesting about it was the fact that the faculty who were engaged in the steering committee the first year had their own projects. So they were doing some amazing things, but they were focused on their own kind of research projects. And it wasn't about teaching and learning, it was about their project. And the way we engaged our students was all about getting the best and brightest. It was about recruitment, not necessarily about understanding how these students are going to use these devices in an academic environment, except individually. And so it's taken, you know, it took us, you know, a year or more to kind of understand how we can actually do a better job. And then last year, in our third year of the initiative, actually, our Digital Cultures and Creativity program started. And so a few months after the iPad came out, we had 55 students who had iPads in hand in this program. It's a living learning community. They do some really amazing things with engaging the students in a creative process in development, in computing, and how they can express it in a digital manner. And the first year, they were focused really on kind of getting the program started. And this past year, they've been actually been pretty much every week, they have a project that requires them to use their iPad in ways that I don't think we ever would have expected. And so like the first day, the students get in, they get their iPad, and they did, you remember the old activity where you'd put like a name, somebody's name on your back or on your forehead or whatever, and then you had to figure out who the person was you had on your back and find that person and that kind of a thing? Well, they did the same thing, but they gave each of the students a t-shirt with a QR code on it. It was fantastic, just watching them engage each other, you know, taking their iPad, doing snapshots of everything, and it was a great activity just to get them started and used to the idea that this is going to be an integral device in your learning experience. So, yep.
I had a question for Florida. You said that you chose to develop locally. Did you consider, do you mean locally as in opposition to, say, a vendor? Or do you mean that, did you consider like the other mobile web frameworks that have been developed around the country, like MIT and now California is doing some stuff? What does local mean, I guess?
That's a very good question. By local, I mean that we have created at the University of Florida a mobile web team that's doing the mobile development physically at the University of Florida. We are using the MIT mobile framework as well as other tools like jQuery Mobile in the process of building the apps at the university. But by local, I'm talking about we decided not to hire new people, but to reallocate some existing IT staff that had mobile development skills into this mobile development project. And I want to, go ahead, let's pick up your question. We'll bring the mic to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that we went live with some mobile stuff last summer with our mobile website, our mobile portal, and we had some focus groups on what's important to the students. And so we had their grades, their midterms, and their score schedules, et cetera, all that out there. But after that, you know, beyond that, I think the biggest challenge was how do we expose all this ERP content from our ERP systems, mm-hmm. real time, to the mobile devices. And so that was the biggest challenge, because if you could do that, and if you could do it easily, then you could have a lot of mobile apps out there. So this summer, we bought a product from our vendor that would do that. It exposed ERP content, you know, workflows, data warehouse, et cetera, mm-hmm. decision-making, all as REST-based web services. And those web services can be consumed from any platform that could that can call REST-based structured data. So we have that in place, and you know, so I think that's overcome with one of our biggest mm-hmm. hurdles, and we can go on and build mobile apps on top of that.
So very good.
And that's actually the path that we've been going down, is actually web services to engage, you know, the mobile content in a mobile manner. So, cool.
Yeah, at the University of Florida, that was also a big issue for us, and one of the biggest initiatives that we invested a lot of time and effort on early in the process was on integrating Shibboleth authentication, which has become the enterprise authentication system at the University of Florida, into the devices so that they can authenticate and get access to that critical data. But I want to, as we start talking about engaging the data, part of what I'd like to do is, you know, there's, for me, the key takeaway in all of this is, again, goes back to the concept that Chris has talked about with this idea of mobile ubiquity. And, you know, here we have students are showing up on our campuses with devices that they're familiar with, they're comfortable with. And that opens up, I think, a really critical question for us, and that is, how can we engage our students as students with these varieties of mobile devices? You know, administrative functions are very important, and I don't want to undersell those. And it's interesting to note that when we did a survey of students at the University of Florida asking them what kind of activities they would like to be able to engage in using a mobile device, the number one thing was they wanted to know bus schedules. You know, they wanted the bus schedules. The first thing that came to mind was an issue of convenience for the students. And many of the items that they listed were focused on that issue of convenience. But the number two item was access to the course management system. They wanted to be able to get at their readings and other learning activities. So I think students are recognizing the value of mobile access to content in a way that institutions often haven't yet begun to recognize. And I think that's probably the single most important thing that I've learned from Chris and the work that they've been doing at Maryland, is to try and change the thinking at the university. We're really good about thinking of administrative applications. And administrative applications are valuable, but there's a whole new frontier here for how we engage our students, how faculty engage in teaching using mobile devices, how students engage in learning using these mobile devices. And I think that's really the valuable Wild West that we should all be loading up in wagons and heading towards.
I think we have one more question.
So this actually relates right to that. So we're starting to think about what kind of mobile applications at a school level we want to look at. And what we've been, or you know, what I've been thinking about is that, you know, you essentially want to build around things that the mobile device is good at. And this might be in conflict with some of the things you're saying. So like, for example, or things that people would do while they're mobile. So it's like room scheduling. We have these breakout rooms that they can schedule. And it seems like that would be something that if they didn't have it, what they have to do now is go to, find a computer and get to sit down and do that. And I'm wondering if that's, you know, the way we're thinking about it is that that's really the direction, is finding out what tools are specifically leveraged by the mobile device, and then all of the content access things that you're talking about, as the mobile browsers get better, you'll be able to get to that just through the regular web presence. Like right now, it's really tiny and all that stuff, but I mean, that might work itself out. I just want to know what you thought of that, or did you have a different experience?
I know for us, I mean, the discussion of, you know, being able to track, not so much use of computers in labs, but for students to actually track, you know, the use of the washer and dryer in the dorm and things like that. Those were things that came up. They're not things that became high on our priority list to develop. But again, we focus a lot on if students wanted to create that, they could have done that project in the mobility programming contest or, you know, in a variety of ways. It's not something that we focused on developing. And I think our development has really focused focused on university content, but it's also focused on, one of the first things we created was our mobile portal, which gave students access to the course management system. And what we call ELMS is Blackboard on our campus. And basically we created an ELMS mobile app. So those were some of the first things that we created. And then our using ResponseWare device. It was actually all about teaching and learning and a little bit about that presence. So I don't know how you guys have approached that.
Yeah, the University of Florida, we've made a recent transition to Sakai. And one of the things that comes with Sakai is, and you can tell how long ago it was built, it's a trigger that enables a domain within the Sakai called /PDA, which gives you an idea of when this was developed. But that enables partial mobile functionality within the Sakai course management system. And we enabled that very early on because it, you know, we knew that that was going to be an important characteristic of student access. But I think, and again, I want to cycle back to, the real issue becomes dealing with thinking about the future, the real issue becomes grappling with the implications of this. I mean, obviously we can start talking about teaching, we can start talking about learning, we can talk about engaging students in learning activities, we can engage students in social learning in a variety of different ways using these devices. But there are also important flip sides that we need to think about and we need to wrestle with. Any of the schools out here that have begun to engage in distance education are working really hard to wrap our minds around the implications of testing at a distance, and how do we deal with secure testing, and what are the limitations of, you know, things like Respondus has the lockdown browser that can do some really good stuff locking down the student browser, but you still can't observe the student in that particular device. And there are all kinds of different tools that are available for trying to monitor students. Well, just think of the complexities that are going to come out of giving students potentially the ability to take quizzes and tests on mobile devices where they're not going to be in their office. They're going to be sitting by some tree and God only knows where taking a quiz and test. I mean, there are some real important issues. But for me, I think those are the issues of content, of teaching, learning, and assessment that we really need to be grappling with for this next generation. what happens with mobile devices and institutional engagement with mobile.
So I have a question. Oh, sorry.
Now, we've technically exceeded our time, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
Just a question. I come from Universidad Panamericana at Mexico, and we give iPods to our students when they go in the university. And what we see is that they are already engaged with the device. There's no problem. You put the content and they are very happy, any content. But our problem is engaging the teachers, especially the older ones. We have some experience with some teachers that just put, we are using Moodle right now, and I have some teachers that they just do the exams in Moodle and they ask the students to answer in the iPod, and it's wonderful for everybody, but that transition is what we are fighting for. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I completely understand that, because that is, you know, after our first year of using in the initiative, that's exactly the question we had is, you know, our faculty, students have glommed onto this and are doing this, and I was having a conversation recently where it was basically, well, I think we've conquered the concept of mobile ubiquity, and I said, for our students, yes, but not for our faculty. They're the ones who need to understand the concept to be able to engage the students meaningfully in an academic experience. And so I think I'd be happy to talk to you offline a little bit, because I know we're beyond the time, and I appreciate everybody staying late. So thank you very much, everybody.
Yes, thank you very much.